Welcome to Nine Works Radio. Lee speaking here from inside the 40th anniversary. Now, Andy, Max and myself are going to be back real soon. Next week, in fact, to kick off a brand new series of Nine Works Radio. We have got some really special content coming up for you as well. I think 30 years of 993. We're going to be interviewing Tony Hatter, among some other bits and pieces there. We're going to be bringing you some stateside content, chiefly reverberating around the spectacular Rennsport reunion, which returns for the first time in 5 years, plus lots of other awesome guests and no doubt a couple of gems of the week from Max along the way as well. For now, though, we wanted to bring you a very special episode that's considered a bonus from what we usually do outside of the normal series. We're just off to Paragon now. Paragon is a Nineworks partner, of course, part of the Nineworks family. And Mark, Jamie, Jason and the rest of the business have just celebrated 30 years. It's 30th birthday of supplying quality Porsches to everybody else. So with that in mind, the guys invited us and you along for an evening of celebration, along with some members of the Driven Not Hidden Collective who have purchased a Porsche from Paragon. We apologise in advance if it's a little bit of a love-in. Again, it was a birthday party, so we're all in full-on celebration mode. We hope you'll enjoy it nevertheless as a bonus episode. We hope you'll join us in wishing a happy 30th birthday to Paragon Porsche. And we'll see you next week when we return with our usual series of Nine Works Radio with quality journalism at its heart. Enjoy.
Brought to you by Nineworks.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the Nineworks Marketplace. Nineworks Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks and Max Newman. Nineworks Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the Nineworks Driven Not Hidden Collective.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another series of Nineworks Radio. Max and Andy, how are you, good sirs?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Very good. I'm very good.
Very good. Yeah. All fine and dandy. Yeah. Still smiling from your 914 drive earlier on.
That was... Let's come back to that.
Okay, yeah.
I need to think about that.
Okay, fine. Max and Andy and I are not alone in this room, dearest listener. We are surrounded by a good dozen hardcore Porsche enthusiasts. We're here at Paragon Porsche to celebrate 30 years of the business.
Yay!
So join us at
Happy
the...
birthday.
You can style it out, Andy, if you like. So, we are joined by the Driven Not Hidden Collective, some members from the collective who have purchased cars from this very showroom over the last 30 years. Some more than once. We'll find out who the culprits are a little bit later on. Joining us at the table, though, we are joined by Mark, Jamie and Jay from Paragon, who have sold everybody in the room the cars. I think you've got the biggest smiles, gents.
I can't believe we've managed to actually get all three of you at once.
Yeah.
That's not happened before, is it?
No.
Are you ever in the room?
No, we are.
We talk to each other.
Yeah.
So I think just for the benefit of those listening at home, it'd be good to just do like an individual introduction. So Mark, first of all, thanks for letting us come to your lovely showroom.
Thank you all for coming.
Ideal. Jamie, thanks very much for like copious food and drink today.
It's lovely having you all here.
Absolutely ideal. And then Jay, just like, thanks for everything you do, my man. So what, thank you for actually giving me the 40th luggage today, about 5 months after. You've kindly been storing it for me. I forget every time I turn up.
So you're allowed to mention that on your podcast?
Laura doesn't listen to this. She did the voiceover at the start and that's it.
Right, okay. Yeah, no, it's great to see you, mate. And great to see everyone else. Thank you very much for making the trip down on what is quite a sort of wet evening. So it's great to see all those cars out there.
Hey, hashtag
driven not hidden.
Exactly. It's a really, really special occasion. As we said, we're celebrating 30 years of Paragon as a business, which we're going to dive into shortly. And yeah, as I said, we sent out an invite to the guys and girls that have bought cars from you previously. So, I mean, as I said, everybody's had that lovely buying experience from this wonderful company here. So hopefully it brings back really warm memories for you guys sitting over there to come back to the scene of the crime. So yes, happy days. So 30 years of the business. Perhaps you wouldn't mind, Mark, just reminding everyone of the beginnings of Paragon.
Yeah, so we rented it to start with in 1993. Myself and a good friend of mine, a guy called Adrian Mole, the original one. We worked together at a Ford dealership. He was the body shop manager and I was a sales director. And we were both had a passion for Porsches, and we'd managed to buy a Porsche each, and they were parked on the forecourt. And in that 90s recession, we had a few visitors with Porsches that no longer had anywhere to service their cars. So we sort of felt there was a bit of a need for it, and it mainly the reason was it felt like it was going to be good fun, but a lot more fun than the Fords and things. And so we were reckless because we were in our early 20s, couldn't see anything going wrong. So yeah, little village petrol station at the time, and the guy was desperate to get rid of it and retire. So yeah, we managed to get in. We sort of had to rent it for a couple of years because, surprisingly to us, the bank wouldn't lend us all the money. So we had to sort of prove that it was viable. So we rented it for a couple of years and at the same time put deposit down and bought it. And I ran it, we ran it with him for a few years until he went off and did other things. And Jamie joined us a year into it. Yeah. We were doing petrol and Jamie it was attended service. So he'd run out and put the fuel in the cars. We had a little shop. We were doing VW. I was racing Beetles, so we were doing Beetles, a few camper vans, and Porsches. The Porsche side of it grew as we could afford to stock them, I suppose. And it was good.
Housewife's favourite, Jamie Tyler, rushing out to fill your car up with fuel.
They love
what
it.
A treat! I bet they do.
There's been some fantastic archive pictures that you guys have shared on your Facebook page over the course of this year. And it's been great seeing the building develop from what it was. It literally looked like that petrol forecourt. Then I think there was an extension outwards, wasn't there?
And
then
we had we had a 3-litre turbo in the shop, didn't we? We used to sell milk and eggs and baked potatoes for people and microwave them for them and things like that. And then we had one car in front of the sort of service desk, if you like. We had one gold 911 turbo.
You've got the while you wait with the servicing and you've got the MOT window, but I just think maybe with a baked potato.
It was nice having your own fuel station.
Yeah, right.
I'm glad we haven't got baked potatoes. I'll be even fatter than I am.
We've obviously in previous podcasts, we encourage the listeners to go back and view our previous episodes. But I know, Mark, we did a fantastic episode with you documenting certainly your career racing as well as with this business. And then Jamie and Jason separately have had you guys on as well to talk through. Because, I mean, Jason, you say that you're the T-boy, but you have been here like...
And the new boy.
Yeah. Is it 15 years? Have I undercooked it?
I think slightly. It's 18 years in November.
Okay, right, yeah. But who's counting, hey?
Yeah, right. The 21st.
Yeah. So, there's a real, wonderful longevity to you guys being here as well as the business, right? So I just encourage people to go and have a listen to those podcasts separately. I don't want to kind of go over the same stuff. So we've got some questions to dive in and explore the last 30 years. And also want to get the guys listening in the room involved shortly as well and introduce those guys. But maybe before we do that, it'd be good to ask you guys from the showroom, how has the Porsche buyer changed over the last 30 years?
Jay, do you want to take that one?
I think, I can't do the whole 30 years, but obviously I can do a significant proportion of that. I think people have become more knowledgeable. And I think that will feed into something we'll talk about later on, because obviously there's a lot more information out there, courtesy some of it, through people such as yourselves, and that's a good thing. They talk about people coming in and not really knowing kind of what a Porsche was, and I don't really come across that very much. now. You know, I don't really have to explain, you know, what these cars are. I think, we're quite lucky in that we've been, you know, this the 30 years thing, you know, people are have a reasonable idea as to, you know, who we are and how we operate and all that sort of stuff now. It's a much more sort of friendly environment. And you don't have to break down quite so many barriers, I think, as one once used to.
Is that because they know the subject already?
A bit of that, yeah. And I think, you know, it does help that, you know, we've been doing what we've been doing in the way that we've been doing it for a very long time. So people are, I think, more receptive to us now as human beings rather than, dare I say, car sales.
It says the kind of explosion in different Porsche models played a part, because 30 years ago, I think, was it just the 911 in the lineup?
1995.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2 years after we started, basically for a period of about 10 months, Porsche only had one car.
Okay.
One new car was the 993. So the 968, 928 had stopped, and obviously they were gearing up for the Boxster and, you know, the water-cooled cars.
Yeah.
It's odd. We're still, as you know, and as you can see in the showroom, we're pretty selective. We're still predominantly sort of sports car, Porsche sports car dealers. Very occasionally we sell a Macan, but we don't get involved with the battery cars. We don't sell Panameras. I can't think of the last time we had a KN. I mean, we respect those cars, but we've decided to buy and sell the cars that we like, and, you know, that we're really enthusiastic about. And, you know, and also with physical space here, we can only sell so many and stock so many. So we just tend to deal with sports cars.
Yeah. Is that led by, like, more by the car or the buyer? So I would assume
customers as well as, you know, so the whole thing's a more pleasurable experience because people are buying with their heart as well. And, you know, it's there's a lot of passion.
Yeah.
You know, both from us and from the customer. So, yeah, definitely. We look after, you know, because obviously there's some customers that will have an SUV as well, and it might be a KN or it could be. So we still see them in the service department.
Yeah.
But we've just chosen, you know, we sort of worked out. I mean, we there was a period of time where we were selling a lot more cars, and we were sort of chasing numbers to try and sell more cars. But we worked out some years ago that about 150 cars a year to do the job properly is a sort of maximum here.
Okay.
Yeah, you become that, and then you start letting people down. You know, you can't deliver the car quick enough. You can't get it through the workshop and things. So we'll trade a few cars so that, you know, to take those out of that and part exchanges. But 150 retailed cars, you know, to the quality we want to sell them, is comfortable. That's what we can do. So we've decided to make those 150 cars that we really want to buy and sell, and we've chosen, you know, I've obviously got a few favorite classics that I want to, you know, and that would probably be, you know, a sort of maybe a couple of cars a month.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe not, maybe 20 cars a year, something like that. So and then 130, you know, fun sports cars that we're buying and sell. So I think that's probably why. And we decided, you know, we've been here at the same premises for 30 years, and maybe we should have expanded, maybe we should have moved, but we've got a great team of people. It feels, it works really well. You know, we there'll be a couple of stressful times every month or something, but generally it's good fun to work here. It's good, you know, and it's good fun meeting the customers, and hopefully they enjoy visiting us, you know, so it's got to, you know.
Well, I think so, there's, judging by the crowd, but there is a curry on the way, so I'm not sure what the deciding factor was. But
are you saying you're taking a bit of bribery?
Well, yeah. I've got a WhatsApp message from Saki in particular that says, no, I'm joking. Like, I think that'd be a good opportunity to maybe bring the audience kind of in on that. Sure. So it'd be great to, if you don't mind, ladies and gents, anyway. And I also want to say a big shout out to Justine as well, who's keeping this show ticking behind the scenes. So thank you for keeping us all fed and watered and everything else. We do really appreciate it, Justine.
Newest member of staff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, yes, it'd be great if we could just get an intro and maybe reveal the car that you bought from Paragon.
Should I get my roving mic out?
Oh, yes, please, good sir.
Okay, here I go. Who should we go for first? Should we start here?
Hi. Eat the mic, sir. Eat the mic. Hi, I'm Ralph, and I'm a Paragon customer. A couple of years ago, I bought a Porsche 993 C4 from Jason, who got his claws into me. but I've been delighted with it, and I've done a number of European road trips with it, all sort of faultlessly. So it's been a lot of fun.
Hi, I'm Nick, and I'm a Porsche-holic.
Welcome.
And it's all Jason's fault. So there were a couple of firsts with Jason with my first Porsche. So it's the first car I've ever bought blind. And he did a very good job of convincing me what a brilliant example it was. And it was absolutely bang on your description of the car. And it led me into all sorts of antics where I've now purchased 6 cars off you guys, I think. So
shout out to Karen, by the way.
Yeah, shout out to Karen.
Yeah.
Not that she'll listen, I don't think, but we'll have to make her this time. But yeah, 6 cars from Paragon. Wouldn't go anywhere else. So very pleased to be here this evening.
Thanks,
wow.
Nick.
Wow. Yeah.
Cheers. Thank you. My name's Toby, and I blame this podcast. It was last year, I think it was, you had a curry night. You're on TV that time, I can't remember. But you said something about, I don't know, Jamie, it might have been you. Come down and have a chat.
Have a coffee.
What's the worst that could happen?
And then I think maybe 2 weeks later, I was meant to be going to Pilates on a Saturday morning, and it was cancelled. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to pop down to this place called Paragon. I've heard so much about it. And I came down here. Jason was here. Jamie, you were here. I came down here, and I think my beaten up old 996, .1C2 just parked outside. It's like, all right. And I said, yeah, I want to talk to you about some cars. He's like, yeah, let's have a chat. And he said, what else you got? I said, I've got this 997 GTS, but I'm not really getting on with it. So why not? I mean, a little chat. He said, you should try this GT3 sitting here. So I'm not really into GT3s. I'm not a racer. He said, come on, let's take it out. Was it on November? It was like raining outside. It was like leaves everywhere. I was like, surely he's not going to just let me. This guy's just rocked up in his old 996. Take this car out, from the showroom. So yeah, come on. Open the doors. We went out. And within about, 15, 20 minutes, I was like, yep, thank you. Next week, he comes to my house, picks up my GTS, and I picked up the GT3. And since then, I think last time, GT3 in for a bit of services, right? 2 weeks ago. And I said, Jamie, I'm just coming in to see Pete drop this car off for a little bit of work, just a bit of, some rattles or whatever. I noticed you've got this 997 in the showroom. I said, just fancy driving that. It's a fascinating colour. I'll just take it out when I pop down. I said, yeah, no problem. I said, I'm not buying it. My wife said, don't you dare buy it. I went out. What was that? He said, go out for 10 minutes. I think I was out for half an hour. I came back and said, I'm buying it. So there you go. This place is addictive, so be careful.
I think this should be a public health warning for Mr. Dyer.
Toby, I think the question on everybody's lips is, how many Pilates classes have you done since? Yeah, I bet it's none.
I'm James, and I have a 996 C4S that I purchased from Paragon just about a year and a half ago now. I dealt with Jamie to begin with, and I have to say it was the most enjoyable purchasing experience of my life. It was my first Porsche and first, obviously, 911, and it was just a really, really enjoyable purchasing experience, and all the build up to it in terms of all the pictures Jamie would be sending as the car was going through the workshop and then detailing, etc. And I was quite sort of hesitant about going for a 996 because of all the obvious nasties that are out there on the internet and people spread around that may be slightly over exaggerated perhaps, but I think the preparation of the cars here is second to none, and from all the dealerships that I looked at prior to purchasing from here, there was nothing quite like it. So very happy with the car and enjoying every minute. So thank you very much. And thanks for the food tonight as well.
Thanks. Thanks. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Andy. And I've got a drinking problem.
This is what this sounds like at the moment. Yeah. It's like a meeting of the Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll pass on to the next person.
Hi, I'm Saki Bramde. I recently purchased a 997 GTS manual from Jamie. I was prized out of a lovely 993 Targa to get into the 997. I've been a 911 Virgin customer for a long time, bought and sold a few cars to them. But Jamie was celebrating the fact that he's converted me now to Paragon, and a few more cars to come. I have to admit, before I paid the deposit, I watched Lee's collection video for his 40th anniversary. And he said in that video that he was not getting any special treatment. This is how they treat every one of their customers. I didn't quite believe that because I thought, you know, he's known them for so long. There must be something. I don't know for sure, but I certainly don't think I got any different treatment than Lee did, including, I think it was about 4 o'clock in the morning when I woke up after two sleepless nights, texted Jamie to say I'm buying the car. So, you know, the personal service here is second to none. So thank you. And it's great to be part of the Paragon family.
Amazing. Thanks. Thank you. Saki, did you get the Caribbean holiday as well then?
I also got first class.
No. Right, stop that pod.
I'm Nigel. I'm feeling pretty hard done by, given I've bought three cars from Paragon and I haven't even seen an easy jet flight. So my first car was, I still have, was a 964 I bought in 2003, I think it was, before the showroom got all revamped and went very, very fancy and up to date as it is nowadays. And since then, I've bought a 996 GT3 RS and just recently a Boxster, 981 Boxster. Lot of money you spend on these cars, so if you spend that money, you want to be confident that you're getting a good one. And that's, I think, like other people have said here, is the sentiment that you have when you buy from Paragon. You know, if something goes wrong, then they'll help you through. And yeah, it's been great to have a 20 plus year relationship with these guys.
Thanks, mate. Cheers. Thank you.
Fantastic. Now, we've also got Ned here, who's Nigel's son. Would you like to a couple of words? Because you're bound to be a purchaser in the future.
So, as Nigel's son, I've obviously been through quite a lot at Paragon.
Show us on the doll where he touched you.
With my inheritance. So I feel as though I do deserve a Porsche from you. Yeah. Hey.
Which one?
He has got three. So.
Maybe just the 964 and the GT3 and the Boxster. But anyway, hopefully, when I'm older, if I do get enough money, I'll be able to purchase something or other from here, which is a good purchase because our cars, they've seemed pretty solid so far. Yeah.
Cheers,
thank
Ned.
You.
Cheers,
Ned. Spot
thank
on.
You. Thank you, Ned. Well done.
Hi there, I'm Kev Lyons. I bought a 997, or my wife bought a 997 Carrera 2 in November last year from Jay. And I had made contact before. I'd met Joe McCary years before at work, and he had great networking. He'd given Jay my contact details, my email, and Jay got back to me, and it wasn't the right time for me. And then I saw my car, or the one we bought, on the Nineworks marketplace. And I thought, I'll have another look at that. And I'd been looking at other websites, cheaper cars, saw this and thought, that looks pretty nice. Phoned Jay up. And again, sight unseen, I put a deposit down, came to see the car the next week with my wife. And she just took one look around here and the quality of the cars and went, this is pretty good. And we've been absolutely bowled over with the whole experience and all the way through. And the backup from the service department has been, they go the extra mile. I phoned Pete up about coming here tonight and said, is there any chance I can come down and have some work done on the car? Couple of minor things needed sorting out. And I wanted some cruise control put in it. And he said, I think we can sort that out. The thing was, he was on holiday at the time and he responded to my email from, which I just think is just above and beyond, and sorted out the whole thing for me. And it's been brilliant all the way through.
Spot Kev, two things. First of all, I think the listener needs to realise that Kev has driven a very long way to be here today. So Kev resides up in Cheshire and is very much hashtag driven, not hidden. It's come all the way down to sometimes sunny Sussex. And the second thing I'd like to say on your comment with Pete, so I also tried to book in for today. And he said, it might not be possible. I might be able to squeeze you in. I said, why is that? Yeah. And he said, well, no, he said, yeah, Kev, Saki and Nick have all booked in. It's a bit of a fight for time slots.
What I should say as well is when I came to test drive the car, it was wet today, but it was icy, wet, snowy. It was, there'd been torrential rain. I got in that car out just outside the showroom, sat next to Jay, and I said, this is really nice. And he kind of looked at me, I said, this is the first time I've been in one of these. And it really was. That was the first time I've ever driven a 911. I probably sat in one in a Porsche Chiron, but I knew I wanted one. And that, so, yeah, fantastic all the way through.
Okay, I'll go last.
Uh-oh.
My name's Oliver. I bought my first car from Paragon back in 2006 from Jamie, which was a 996 GT3 RS. And... thanks to them, I think I've owned another 20 plus 911s Porsches subsequently. Not all, sadly, have I purchased from Mark, Jamie and Jason, but I've sold a few back to them and it's always been a pleasant experience. And I've also probably drunk quite a lot of coffee here over the years. So I'd like to thank them for that. And to say, here's to the next 30 years. Well done,
thanks,
lads.
Ollie.
Thanks,
Ollie.
Thanks,
Ollie.
Thank you. Absolutely fantastic. Awesome to hear from so many of the collective.
Wonderful, thank you.
On that, yeah. So,
I think, you know, really, we should say, you know, thank you very much to all of you lot.
Yeah, because, kind,
you know,
words.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah.
It's amazing what a curry will do.
Yeah. Go for that. Yeah.
It did feel like Alcoholics Anonymous.
Here's to you.
It really does.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely spot on.
I'd like to echo actually some of that. You know, I was a Paragon customer long before I met you, Lee, and got involved with all of this sort of thing. But I, like a lot of people, I wanted to buy a 911 before I was 30. I didn't do that. I bought a house in the end, which was probably a good idea. But I was 36 still, you know, so relatively young, I felt at the time. But, you know, a committed Porsche enthusiast lifelong. And I'd bottled it the year before, you know, I'd saved up money and had a bit of redundancy as well, actually, which was quite helpful. And I was in a new job and I wasn't quite brave enough to go for it. So I bought a BMW, and it was only a year later that I, you know, I really wanted to do it again. And I'd, you know, I narrowed down my perception of the places that I thought would be good to buy a car from. And I looked at some cars at different places, and I saw the car that I bought on the Paragon website, because I was looking daily. And I came down to meet, and I met Jamie, and I tried the car, and I was really nervous because I was going to buy the thing outright. You know, there was no finance involved. I needed to trade in my Beamer, and I was going to pretty much spend all of my money. So, you know, the IMS thing, the RMS thing, you know, those sorts of things do weigh on your mind, because you think, God, you know, I haven't got money left over to rebuild this thing if it shits itself. So one of the things that was significant in my purchase was thinking, okay, I think I'm buying a good car, and I think we're in it together, Jamie and I and Mark at the time. And that sort of gave me the confidence to spend, well, 27 grand is what I spent on that car. Kept it for 9 years, and it was bloody fantastic. So, and I'm still here.
Yeah, it's good.
That's right on, Max. Absolutely banging. So, yeah, look, many, many like happy memories, I think, made in this room over the years. So with that in mind, we're going to turn to some questions to make sure this just doesn't turn into a love-in. Yeah. Just try and kind of, yeah, keep some sort of Porsche semblance going. So we've got some questions. Max, Andy and I have some. We're very much like the guys and girls in the audience as well, to chip in with some questions as and when. We'll run around for Mike. I know we have a young journalist among our ranks tonight, so Ned will be putting some questions up as we go as well. So the first question we'd like to ask is,
you guys are enthusiasts too, so have your own opinions changed over the last 3 decades?
I mean, my opinions on cars and what I like and things like that change, I think, on a weekly, if not month. I'm always surprising myself by suddenly getting the urge to change a car for another. You know, personally, it's always changing. Yeah, things that I thought I'd sort of gone, you know, cars that I'd had in the past, I thought I'm sort of done with that model of car, and then you suddenly, 10 years later, you see it in a different light, and you think, oh, I really feel the need to buy one of those. So yeah, for me, it's changing all the time, and specs as well, and colours and things. I think everybody, if they're honest, like the colour thing, you know, it's, people are being more and more adventurous with
trainer colours. Choice.
Yeah, chain. Yeah. So yes, I definitely feel personally that this. Things that shock me sometimes when I suddenly see something, think, oh, I really haven't seen one for a while. It's normally when you haven't seen a car for a while and it turns up, and you know, we all get excited about, you know, sometimes we can have that thrill by buying and selling the car, and then other times you sort of need to actually own it. So yeah, for me, definitely.
I used to think that it was important to, you know, have an opinion and to sort of stick to it. And I actually learnt over the years that actually it's more important to be able to review that and review your opinion, because things do change over time. We're getting older, whether we like it or not. And, you know, that's one thing. And, yeah, as Mark was saying, a reflection upon a car that you had a view upon when you were 35 can be entirely different when you're 52.
Is there anything, maybe, Mark, that you would think, I'd love to get one of those across the books at Paragon, to have had it through a particular 9/11 or anything that you haven't bought and sold, or that you've missed, that you tried to buy?
We did have a customer that offered us a long, long time ago a 959 for 75,000.
Yeah.
Oh, at the time, I thought it wasn't a very good looking car. I thought I'd rather have, you know, a 993 turbo or whatever. But so that's a car that we used to look after, and I've never driven a 959. So that's, there's cars that intrigue me like that, definitely. But I, you know, like all of you guys, you end up, on Monday, I should have been working, but I started looking on piston heads, and you suddenly start looking at old 944s, you know, and I thought, well, I don't know why I've spent 10 minutes looking at these, but you suddenly, you know, and I haven't driven a 944 for a long time. And that, you know, when we started the business, half the stock would have been 944s. But I haven't driven, it must have been 10 years since I've driven a 944. I mean, we see them in here, and the technicians drive them, but they're not my car, so I can't just jump in and have a go. You know, and we haven't. Well, Jay probably has, but I haven't driven one for a long time. Yeah, so a Silver Rose 944 turbo.
Oh,
Rose,
yeah.
And we used to sell those cars when they were a few years old.
Yeah.
They were 10,000 quid when they were about 3 years old.
A lot more now. Yeah. Where earlier on in the conversation, we were talking about how this there's been like an explosion in the Porsche offerings of like different models, even kind of within the realm of sports cars, right, where the Boxster and Cayman has come along to join the 911. So has that made your job easier or harder? I mean, again, like in the cars that the gents announced tonight, there's a vast array of kind of different cars in there that you obviously have to be knowledgeable about in order to pass on the right maybe guidance. Is that hard, or is it actually easier to help place a customer into the right car for them?
Well, I think generally, if there's more choice, effectively would mean that there's more opportunity to get it right for that individual, because as we've all discussed before, there's a tremendous variety of Porsche sports cars that do subtly or sometimes less subtly different things, and so there should be that perfect Porsche for, you know, everyone. My answer would be that it's made it easier. It's made it more interesting as well, and I think you can hit if you do your job properly, if you ask the right questions and you try, you know, the right things and you check, you know, you can get it right first time. You know, you can, it takes some time. It always takes some time. And that's why that actually reflects back to something Mark was saying earlier on about, you know, the number of cars that we sell per year is X. And that's about it, really. We don't want to be higher than that, because if we chased that, then we might do it, you know, we might do it, but we won't do it as well for each and every customer and stuff. And so, you know, we'd have a churn of customers. And as I think you probably heard from, you know, when the guys were being interviewed a minute ago, you know, it's the long-term stuff that counts, because, you know, each and every time we will be better at getting the right thing for that person, you know? It's all just down to knowledge and stuff.
Can I flip that question out to the guys listening? So as a buyer, do you feel like the proliferation of the Porsche model lineup has made Porsche purchasing, anywhere this is, easier or harder? Nick, I'm looking at you, mate. And the reason I say that is because, you know, you used to have like a fleet of four-wheel drives. We were just talking about it over the curry. And then the cars have changed quite substantially. But you've had to buy a lot of cars to find those cars.
Yeah, I feel like I've been on a journey. So 4S, 996 Carrera 4S, then a 996 Turbo, 997 Carrera 4 GTS, all four-wheel drives, all 911s, all rear engines. Got the GT3, first rear-wheel drive car. Started to change my opinion on things. Switched out to a mid-engined 981. Fell in love with that platform completely, plus the later PDK gearbox that led to the Spider. The Spider and the GTP put pressure on the four-wheel drive GTS, so that got swapped out. And I ended up with a rear-wheel drive, later PDK, so a la Cayman 981 equipped 991 GTS. So I've definitely been on that journey, and it's not stopped. And that's where I said I'm a Porscheholic. because you constantly reevaluate. It's exactly what Jay just said. You're constantly reevaluating where you're at and why, and you're constantly reappraising the car and how it fits your needs and how it drives. So for me, I've now gone from 3 4-wheel drive 911s to 3 rear-wheel drive naturally aspirated cars with the gearboxes that work for me right now. But that's not to say that it won't change in the future. I never used to like 997.1s on lobster claws, and now I really want one. So it's kind of how that, you know, you can look forward, but also sometimes you need to go back.
I think, like Max, we were chatting earlier, weren't we? And you're having that experience at the moment, aren't you? You're obviously really enjoying the new purchase.
Yeah.
But always looking around it.
Always looking. Yeah. Always looking. There's always something else, isn't there? And yeah. But you have to take, as a good friend of mine keeps saying, you need to keep making decisions and doing things. You know, I kept my first 911 for 9 years. I thought at one time that I might never sell it. I kept my second one for 2.5 years for various reasons. And now I'm trying to be more bullish and trying things. But, you know, Toby and I chat quite a lot. And at one point, I might end up going a full circle. You know, I may end up back in a 997. I think there's a book running in the collective about when that's going to happen. So confident are some people.
That good friend wouldn't be him.
So, but it is, yeah, it is really interesting. And I don't know, Jay, has Nick surprised you with any of the things that he's done?
Well, yeah, but none of those can be mentioned here. I mean, it's the thing. It's like I suddenly thought whilst I was answering the last question that this all sounds like, you know, it's my gaining of knowledge and all this sort of stuff. You know, it's so, I mean, you know, watching what Nick's done and getting the feedback from Nick is perfect because, you know, there's a logical thought process to how he's, you know, what he wants and that sort of stuff. I don't know, you know, honestly, you know, it's like I used to be in the wine business donkeys years ago. And there would be people out there that know more about specific wines than I ever did, you know. And you'd have to, and I was a wine merchant, and that's cool, you know. And I think Nick's now getting to that level with certain cars that way beyond what I know, you know. And I would actually refer to him and ask him for, you know, his experiences of certain things because, you know, let's face it, I'm a great advocate for effectively the driven, not hidden type thing. Although I'm not a very good practitioner at this point, but. You know, it's you guys are actually putting the miles in with these cars, and so you know that helps validate or dismiss, you know, my views on certain things. And yeah, I mean, Nick, I don't know, Nick's a law unto himself, basically. I mean, he's gonna find his way through the whole lot, I think, soon. But
Max, with what Jay's just said, it just brought this to mind that we went down to Spa with a couple of customers and Ollie was down there and things as well. And Jay spent 2 days with his pal in a car that he'd sold him in a Cayman S.
Yeah, 987 Cayman S. 2006, yeah.
Which
wasn't worth...
Wasn't what you... No. Probably choice of, you know, it was a good, great car, isn't it? But it's not set up for the track as such. But you had as much fun as anybody going around the circuit, and Martin, occasionally let him have a go in his own car.
That was.
I think you came back with a. It was. You know, you learned about those cars when you were down there.
Yeah, it was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, bearing in mind I've been selling those for, you know, 15 years or whatever, and it's just, it was absolutely extraordinary what this car, and you know, it was a very special track day and stuff, and I sort of jokingly said, well, it's not really a joke. I reckon that its value was probably an order of magnitude less than the average in that pit lane. There was some exquisite stuff down there, really, really nice. But this car, so, you know, it's worth whatever it is, you know, 10, 12, some £14,000, something like that, I don't know. And it's done 75,000 miles, and it's a road car, and it's used every day. And yet, my God, what it could do. And it 2 days, you know, in the dry, can you believe it, at Spa, 2 days in the dry, I can't believe it, and I was there. And it just, you know, it was like clockwork.
So you're very much a fan of the mid-engine platform. I just want to bring it back to the question. I know, Saki, you've got something to add on whether this proliferation of the Porsche model lineup has made the buying experience harder or easier.
Yeah, it's almost a question back, actually. But I mean, from my own personal experience, you know, I came out of a air-cooled 993 to move into a 997, and a lot of people have raised eyebrows and asked me questions about why I did that. I almost have a question back to Jamie and Jason and Mark. You know, with the proliferation of models, how do you make sure you're getting the right car to the right person? Because my move from a 993 into 997 was, you see, I don't see them as a car that gets me from A to B. I see it as something that allows me to experience what I want to experience. And the experiences I now want better suit a 997 GTS than a 993. So how do you make sure that you get the right car to the right person? Because I imagine often people come in here saying they want something and they walk out with something very different.
It's a super question.
I mean, that is a brilliant question. And just as a quick example of that, someone came in here yesterday thinking they were going to buy a 997 Gen 2 Turbo that I think is on Nineworks Marketplace, and have bought a 996 GT3 Mark 1. So
how does that happen? Because those two cars are very different.
Well, they had the very, very, very bad fortune to bump into me. So that was just for start. He's as it turns out, it's basically questions. It's questions, questions, questions. It's what do you want from this car? What are you going to use it for? What are you really going to use it for that? And just checking those things. And he actually came to, you know, it's not, I want him to have the right car from us. We want whoever it is to have the right car from us. And it's just making sure that they are going to get, because this is the first time that he's going to buy a car from us. And I know he's had lots. And I know he's had quite a lot of Porsches. And it was just really, you know, trying to tease out of him actually what he was doing. You know, does he really want to get rid of the thing that he's talking about getting rid of in order to do that swap? Or is there something more clever? And what are the motivations? You know, what's the most important motivation in this car? And that's it. It's just questions and listening and trying to employ, you know, what intelligence I've got left, or we've, you know, and the experiences that we've got, you know, as a gang. I mean, you know, I think all of us would actually refer to the others, you know, to try and get, if you think I'm missing something here, you'd ask, you know, and just think, you know. So it's literally, it's just information, and it's just teasing out of people what they want this car to do. Is it the most, you know, track focused monster at one end of the thing? Is it something, are they very, very keen on this car potentially attaining money in the future and all this sort of stuff? What, you know, or is it, I want the you know, the most modern thing. I've got to have Apple CarPlay. You know, I mean, it can be anything, you know.
We're also in a very fortunate position to have time available to spend with people as well. You know, for numerous test drives in numerous cars to try and dwindle down what people want.
There's never a time limit, you know.
Yeah.
There's never a time limit. If we've physically got the time, if we've appointed, you know, some time to speak to somebody, there's no end limit. You know, I've been here until 8 o'clock in the evening with people, you know. So, you know, well, we are again, aren't we?
it's a fab question, that, Saki, to be honest. Yeah, thanks for asking that.
I hope we've answered.
Are there any other questions? Yeah, Nick?
I've just got a point to build on that. So I've seen it both ways. The one time I didn't buy a car from Paragon, I really wanted a 996 GT3. In my head, that's what I wanted, but I couldn't quite stretch to the budget. So I convinced myself, and I wasn't persuaded otherwise by that particular salesman, to buy a 996 Turbo. And it was the biggest mistake I've made in my Porsche journey, because as soon as I bought it, I realized it wasn't what I wanted. I convinced myself, just because it had a Metzger engine, that it was as good and it was faster and it was the right car for me, but it wasn't. It was entirely the wrong car for me. It's also happened in reverse here, where I came in to buy a GT Silver 997.1 Turbo and ended up buying a Carrera 4 GTS. So, and that's because you listened and you came up with alternatives, and that's what the other dealer didn't do for me.
Any other questions from the collective?
So given how many cars you chaps have sold over the years, if you, with no budget constraints, and you could have one Porsche for the rest of your time in your own personal garage, what would it be to each of you?
Lee will know mine, and you'll like it, Ollie.
That's happens every time.
964 RS.
It's always, yeah. Freddie will like box it off.
I owe you a beer for that one, Mark.
Yeah. Sorry, Lee, I was fed the line.
I feel you owe it to the audience to explain why, Mark.
Because I guess for a few reasons. I mean, obviously, when we started the company, you know, in 1993, that was the current car. That was the ultimate, normally aspirated 911. in 1993, and it was current. But for me, I love the old cars. I really love, you know, we've got that 2.4S sitting over there, and I think that's one of the most beautiful cars. And I like the short wheelbase cars. You know, as you know, I've had one of those. So I love that era of car, and I've got a 1970 Targa. But they only work on certain days because you don't have ABS, and, you know, in modern traffic, there's a lot of cars on the road, and if someone, you know, if it's a damp day, it doesn't matter how skilled you are, you've got to leave a fair amount of braking distance. If someone just jumps on the brakes in front of you, you will, if you're running too close behind them, hit them. Basically, you're going to, you know, however you modulate the brakes, you'll end up doing a skid with a car without a 911 without ABS, you know, because they're obviously, you know, very much rear biased on the weight distribution and things. So the 964 RS is, to me, it's the last of the cars with a view, the gun barrel wings, the, you know, the trailing arm suspension. So you get that 911 feel. It's the ultimate iteration of the first generation of car. You know, from 1964 to me to 1992 was, or 93, it's the last of the line. You get the, you know, a reasonable horsepower, lovely gearbox, lots of special parts because it's an RS, and it's as light as the 964 ever got. So yeah, it's just the best of my favourite shape 911.
But other than that, you're not fast, really.
No.
it's a fair argument and a good point. What about you boys then?
I've got a soft spot for Nigel's 964. Makes me go weak at the knees every time that comes in for a service.
Two 964s. I was sitting on the back of it.
That's because you have one, isn't it?
I know.
In that colour.
Yeah. It's just the design 90 wheels and everything about that car is just so lovely.
Yeah. Talk us through the spec.
Well, first of all, I'm really relieved. I've been panicking for years every time I come in here with that car and I see Jamie going wobbly. I thought it was me that was doing it.
Sorry, Nigel.
It's the car, thank God. So, yeah, the car's an H-plate 1990. Velvet red, which I think was a special order colour. It's similar to the sort of more well-known arena red you get in the 993s. C2, manual box. Sunroof, dare I say it, which I love and wouldn't be without. And that was my first Porsche that I bought. I remember coming down here and having heard a bit about Paragon. And it was later on in the year, because I came in and turned up in my old BMW, and whoever it was I spoke to said, oh yeah, go out and sit in the cars, and they're out in the forecourt. I went out there, sat in one of these cars, 964 or 993, I can't remember, in the dark, closed the door, looked around it, thought, this is lovely, right, I've had enough. Could I get out of the thing? No. I couldn't work out how to get out of the car. But yeah. And I mean, I'm probably going slightly off tangent here, but that's a car I'd never sell. And it's a special car to me. I echo what Mark has said about the gun barrel wings, etc. But for me personally, it was my era. It's when I started to drive that car was on the road, and my first real memory of a 911 was myself with three mates in a 1.3 VW Polo, which was slow at the best of times, and sitting too close behind one of these 911 things at a junction, and the guy obviously looked in his rearview mirror and thought, ah, four lads, right, I'll give it some welly. And I just remember this thing taking off into the distance, and that was a 964, and that's really what cemented the 911 and that particular model in my mind.
Superb, yeah, superb. More 964. yeah, love in the air there.
Jay's,
I think
Jay's
yeah.
keeping quiet. Yeah. Yeah, go on, Jay.
Well, yeah, that's because I've just gone through about 400,000 permutations, and I haven't actually. The answer is 42. Oh God.
It was asked by Ollie, who has a 20, well, how many is it? 20, 22 Porsches. So
yeah, thanks.
Ollie hasn't found the one yet.
Thanks Ollie. Yeah.
Well, Jason.
There's a bit of me.
Oh, no, he's there.
Right. Like,
he's running through the stock list.
Just going to say that Ollie, I was speaking to Ollie earlier, and he was saying that is that 964 RS was probably his favourite. So,
yeah.
I'm not saying that.
No, just because we've had two 964s, haven't we? Yeah. I do love them, but I'm definitely not going to admit that right now. There's a bit of me, I think, I'm going to have to say 996 RS for me, because, you know, it's such a, I mean, it's sort of a bit nerdy and stuff, but it's kind of, you know, that proper motorsport thing. You know, I grew up massively into cars. You know, I mean, the first, you know, when I was a real small child, it was all sort of land speed record stuff and reading about Donald Campbell and Malcolm Seagrave and all that. And then I got into, you know, motorsport and circuit racing and all that sort of stuff. And it's the motorsport thing which always has attracted me. It's the you know, Porsche have been obviously bloody fantastic at it. And I just think that car it's all been said before, I know, and I'm not going to say anything new now, but, you know, the zenith of a purely engineered, passively suspended, non-traction control. Nothing. There's nothing particularly clever about that car. It's just exceptionally well engineered. And I think that's it. You know, that's it for me, for the sort of, get jumping in a car. I want my Porsche to, I'm not going to use it on a daily thing for, you know, for the journeys which I do and that sort of stuff. So it's a special occasion thing for me. It always will be. And I want a fix on, you know, of that thing, of that driving pleasure stuff. If you drive it well, it's going to go well, you know, and if you don't, it's not going to go very well, and it's going to be horrible, you know. So, and I think it's a distillation of what a 911 kind of means to me. So, there you go.
Okay.
Key follow-on question, Jay: red wheels or blue wheels?
It's always the question.
Yeah.
Two words.
I suppose ideally I'd have blue. Oh, I'm blue.
Two words. So he's got one left. Amazing. You see, you would go blue. Blue is faster.
I mean, if
I'm joking,
if, I suppose if you're going to have the rarest of the rare, I suppose that. But I don't care. I honestly don't care. Yeah, I don't care. Just stick me in it. I'm happy.
Stick me in it. Right. And unless there are no other questions from the collective, I'd like to invite a young journalist up in the making. So Ned is there. It's your son, Nigel. So yeah, Ned is an absolute T911 future editor. Ned, have you got a question for the guys, for Mark, Jamie or Jason at all?
What would you say is the best generation of car that sells best? Because you've obviously got a big range here, the 996, 356, 991, the old, new, and the in between. So what would you say generally sells best?
Super question.
That's a tough question, isn't it? Because we sell a lot of every generation, really, don't we? And we've all got our own favourites as well, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we're known or best well, you know, most well known for those cars between sort of 4 and 25 years old. That for most part, we're getting quite well known, obviously, for the classic stuff as well now. But your question was, you know, what do we sell most of? Was that right? I think it's probably sort of 99 now. I mean, it's a shifting thing, basically, because, you know, there's a supply and demand thing. Because we buy and we own what we sell, we have to buy well and all that sort of stuff. So it's sort of, are there enough of
a particular type of or age of car that can come in, we can buy in, we can, you know, as good cars, make them hopefully exceptional and sell and make some money, because that's obviously our business. And obviously that's a moving thing. So, you know, there aren't very many, sadly, there are very few, you know, 996s or whatever now that will fulfill those criteria that we can make sense of. So if there were, we'd have loads, you know, simple as that, because we love them all. But so it's more, so shortly, more succinctly to answer your question, Ed, probably 991, you know, the 991 generations now, and 907 Gen 2. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I'd say.
And I'd say probably S's and GTS's predominantly, don't you think? With a few turbos in the mix.
Yeah. And obviously there'll always be a GT3 here if I have anything to do with it.
Just before we wrap up, it'd be nice to ascertain what you guys think, again, looking at the longevity of Paragon. What's been the biggest challenge to the business over that sort of time period, looking at you, Jason?
The internet's changed the way our business operates massively, because when I think back nearly 30 odd years ago when we used to do advertising and stuff like that, our business nowadays, with the internet being a 24-hour shop window effectively for us, back in the days then, it was the lady from Auto Trader would come around on a Monday, take all the photographs and a normal camera outside. And the way we used to process things as well, by taking photographs, getting them processed, scanning them, and then uploading them to our website and stuff. But everything was towards the end of the week. So you'd wait for Auto Trader, Top Marks, Exchange and Mark to come out. And then the phone would start ringing as soon as the adverts came out. Whereas nowadays, it's every day of the week, 24 hours a day, you've got your shop window open for people to look at. So the internet's changed our business massively. And the way that people buy cars from the internet as well.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would say that, and again, this is for me looking on the outside, that would make things easier.
Yeah, a lot easier. Okay. I mean, when you think how many hours and the time that we used to put into advertising cars and the way it was all done as well, it just took so much time. And you effectively only had one shot at it. If you took a bad picture and you got it developed and it was blurry, there was not a lot you could do about it. Once it was processed and you scanned it, it was rubbish. Whereas nowadays, it's, you know, you can Photoshop things, you can go and take it again and erase things, and it's just so much easier.
Yeah. Okay. And what about looking at the other way? Like, so what are the biggest challenges facing you over that sort of time?
I mean, it's definitely got easier in comparison to what things were all that time ago. And obviously nowadays we've got a great team behind us, and also the knowledge behind us as well, in terms of, you know, making everyone's experience that comes through Paragon Store a great experience. So, you know, everything we do now, we feel we've got down to an art and make it good for ourselves that are operating here, and then obviously for our customers as well.
Mm. So it's that thing when you have setting a high standard is one thing, maintaining it is...
Yeah. And also, you know, we've always got to be effectively one step ahead of our customers and make sure that we're doing things right and just improving everything we do.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay. Lastly, I think it'd be nice to ask Mark, what does Paragon look like in 30 years' time?
30
years' time. Yeah.
Wow.
I think I'll still be here in 30 years' time. I'll still be selling Toby cars.
Jason will be deciding red or blue wheels.
Nick will be on his 23rd car.
Yeah, I don't know, Lee. I mean, you know, we want to keep doing what we're doing for as long as we can. You know, we enjoy it, so there's no, and it works. You know, it's as Jamie sort of said, it's, I'm not going to say it's easy, because it's not easy, because we've put ourselves on this sort of pedestal, as you know, so you've got to make sure that you deserve, you know, it's mutual respect with the customers. And you've got to make sure, you know, it's sort of, you're only as good as the last car you've sold, if you like. So we've got to make sure that we deserve this praise that we've been getting this evening. I like the classics, so I'm always looking for opportunities with classic cars. You know, we've sold a couple of Carrera GTs in the last 12 months, which has been exciting. There's only so many classic cars we can do, because most of them, they're quite labour intensive, and I, you know, if I put too many in, I clog the workshop up with my sort of classic car division, if you like. So that's my sort of, it's not a hobby, it's a business, but it's my thing that I like to do. And I mean, the guys are also enthusiastic about it, but it's sort of something I push, you know, the air cooled cars and things. So
are they sort of halo cars? Is it a nice, are they good things to have around in that?
Yeah, and respect? I think, yeah, I think so. I mean, the racing that I do is, you know, the Peter Auto series is surrounded by classic car enthusiasts. I go to a lot of classic car events myself. So I you know, I like classic cars. And I guess as you get older, you know, it's when I was in my 20s and 30s, it was all about what's the next fastest thing you can put yourself in. And now I'm sort of really appreciating the history it feels really nice to find a car that's sort of worthy of us putting through our system. And you know, you find a good, honest car with a great service history, and it's exciting then to, I'm not saying restore, we don't fully restore cars, but you pretty much, you know, a lot of them are, some of the air-cooled cars now are having bare metal repaints. We're retrimming some cars. You know, we're taking the engines and gearboxes out. And
it's pretty in-depth reconditioning.
It's not a full restoration because we're not finding rusty cars that we're needing to weld and things. But it's quite often, you know, a 30-year-old 911 will be with us for 3 months before we mention it to anyone. It takes us that time to put it through the system. So there's only so many you can do, but it's very rewarding when you've done that. You feel that you've given that car a new lease of life and it goes back out there, you know, as close to when it was sort of delivered when it was new, you know, that gives me a really big thrill. I like that.
Yeah.
That side is sort of evolving slowly, but it's not going to suddenly change, but we just, you know, I spend a bit more time looking for good examples of things.
Yeah. That's interesting, actually, you know, thinking of the challenges to the business, just, you know, I've been looking at that 356 Peter all evening and wondering how difficult philosophically and commercially it is to make something like that a Paragon car, you know, given the, you know, the things that you, you know, the discipline that you apply to all of those cars.
Yeah.
It can't be easy.
No. I mean, that this time round, that car's a lot easier because Jay sold that car 10 years ago. It's been in great hands. They've looked after it. You know, we've been seeing it a lot.
Yeah.
And they've only done about 3,000 miles with it. So this time, you know, second time round, it's easier. The 2.4S is sort of third time. No. So it gets easier. Like that. But obviously, like, 356 Speedsters, you know, the first one I bought was £30,000 and that had a restoration, but the restoration was a sort of £12,000 restoration because that's the sort of money someone would spend on a £30,000 car. Well, you get those cars in now and they need to be taken up to a different level because people's expectations are so much higher. So, you know, that Speedster is probably, the panel gaps and the paint is probably better than it was in 1956.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what's expected today, you know. So that's a bit of a moving target. We can't expect to sell more than two or three Speedsters a year. You know, it just isn't possible for us to. Not if we want to sell them in the condition we want.
Yes.
Because we like to park these cars all next to each other, and the oldest car next to the newest car, and them to present the same.
Yes, yeah.
You know, a lot of classic car dealers will present the car with the patina, and I'm, you know, I think that's really nice as well. I quite like that for myself, but it's not the way that we do things here. So, you know, we don't sell cars with sort of wear and tear, visible wear and tear on them. We take that away.
I think it relates back to Mark, what you said at the top of the conversation, whereby you know the numbers that you do a year and you guys are very happy with that, and in taking on more you're not able to do things how you like currently. So,
yes, yeah, yeah.
I mean, your question was also, you know, how do you think things are going to develop in the future, whatever. I think, you know, we've worked out what we're doing. We know how to do it and all that sort of stuff. The business has organically really grown over time. Now there's just different, you know, media outlets and stuff. If we do a good job, you guys support us, you know, and more people talk about us and that sort of stuff. We're more known to more people. We can do, you know, interesting things with more people across a wider audience, you know, and that's really it. I mean, I personally love the classic cars and all that sort of stuff, and I love obviously the GT cars, we know all that. I'd like for our, you know, for our name to, we've got, you know, customers that are in around the world, but you know, I think there could be more of that. I really do. You know, we've got some really cool people, some of whom I've actually, you know, talked to, obviously, courtesy of Nineworks and stuff. I'd like to sort of strengthen some of those links. God knows how that's going to happen, but you know, it would be good. You know, I think we're doing a good job, and the people that have bought cars from us from other parts of the world have found those cars to be really, really good. It'd be nice to be able to sort of, you know, work with them the way that we can work with people here.
Please, you know, don't export any of my lovely 964 RS. Yeah.
I might get him to stop talking about them if I sell them all.
Yeah, right. It's the cliffhanger that we'll end on, I think, and we'll see how it pans out. We'll check back in 30 years if any of us are still here. And see how we're getting on. But look, it goes without saying, well, first of all, to the listener at home, it has been a little bit of a love in today, but it's been a birthday party. So thank you for tuning in and joining in with the birthday party to celebrate 30 years of Paragon. A massive thank you to everybody from the collective here, driving down from East Sussex, West Sussex, Kent, Essex, Cheshire. Don't think I've missed anybody out, I think they're Dorset, Oxford, and everywhere else in between. So yeah, look, massive thank you to the guys for joining on that. Again, Justine, thank you for keeping us all watered and fed. We do really appreciate it. And of course to Mark, Jamie and Jason at Paragon, thank you for taking all of our money.
Well, we'd obviously like to say a big thank you to all these guys for buying cars from us. It's been a great experience, really, really has.
And thanks for celebrating it with us. Yeah. It's been really good fun. Thank you. And you haven't bought a car yet, Andy.
Maybe we ought to just quickly do a gem of the week. And Andy,
what's
the car that you would buy?
That's easy, isn't it?
I suppose it is, isn't it?
Oh, God.
There it is, isn't it? It's right in front there.
No, it's got to be that one, isn't it? The race car. You need a race and a road version.
Always selling.
Yeah, you might be there. Yeah, I was going to go for
sadly,
the speedster.
Sadly, it's the only one I won't ever sell. Oh,
yeah. I'll go for the speedster. If you're not selling that, I'll go for the spider.
Yeah.
Cool. Silver, red interior, manual. Yeah, done. Where do I sign?
I'll get the card machine.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the Nineworks community, you can do so at patreon.com/Nineworks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.